Hi, friends, and welcome to All Things Relatable, a place where stories are shared. It's hard to put a value on a story because the lasting effects it can have are often priceless. An individual's story has the potential to impact our lives in tremendous ways. My hope for you in joining me today is that this episode resonates with you and that you leave enlightened, ignited, and inspired, because it only takes one moment to spark a change and leave an everlasting effect. Hey friends, today you're going to meet a walking, breathing angel named Karina. You'll understand in a few moments. I met Karina back in LA at the airport just before I was about to board my flight back home. I had about 15 minutes till I was due to board, and I wanted to send a message to Amy Tangerine about a breakthrough I had that involved her just a few days before. So I wanted to find a spot that had good energy as I wrote the message. And so when I spotted this open spot at the bar, I thought, perfect, I'll grab myself a glass of orange juice and send the message off before taking flight. So I ordered my glass and I got typing. Well, in the middle of the message, IG did something funky and the whole thing was deleted. After I quietly cursed IG, I knew it was a sign to put my phone down and just be fully present. Karina was sitting to my left, working on an assignment for nursing, if I remember correctly. And as we started chatting, she mentioned she was celebrating with a glass of wine. So instantly I thought, oh, the semester must be coming to an end, and that's what calls for the celebration. And so I asked just to confirm and find out that she's celebrating that she's getting pregnant the next Friday. You see, the message I was writing to Amy before IG had other plans had been about my multiple miscarriages and the messages that came through after Amy had shared her story too. And then this is where the story turns. Karina was getting pregnant next Friday, not with her embryo, but with another couple's, or so I thought, until she told me she'd be getting pregnant with their twins. And get this, she already had been a surrogate and carried a little boy who was turning one in a few days. So there I am, bawling my eyes out in the middle of the airport. I found out so much more about Karina with the little time we had to chat before our flights, and it all had me in awe. So I cannot wait to dive into her story and share all the details with you. Karina, oh my gosh, thank you so much for being here. I just fell in love with you instantly after talking with you at the airport.
My pleasure, you as well. You're just a joy to talk to. You were.
Oh my God.
And I was really mad that you had to leave.
I know. It worked out that both of our flights for some reason kept getting postponed a little bit more and a little bit more. And then when we actually had to go, I was like, oh my gosh, I had a million questions and I was just so blown away that I'm like, we need to like dive in and have a conversation about everything. So you have a little girl. So I thought maybe starting with your story into motherhood, what did that look like?
I've always loved kids. I've always absolutely loved them. And then around the age of, how old am I? Should be 8 this year. 24. We had tried, you know, the first time to get pregnant and we got her the first try. And it was just awesome, amazing. At that point, I loved being pregnant, which is what got me here. She's just a big sun joy. I was looking at her picture right now. I have a little picture of her, like looking at me from the fireplace. And I just loved everything. You know, I was a stay-at-home mom for a couple of years. And then me and her dad had split. So that made it kind of tougher. And so it's just, I love my daughter to pieces, but at my head, I was like, okay, I'm done. But there are people out there that are struggling severely and hard, and they're struggling to get their own babies. And, you know, as this time I'm thinking about it, my sister is trying to get pregnant with her baby, and she got pregnant and then she got a miscarriage like right after the first trimester ended. So I'm like, and then I see all my friends I went to high school with, and they're having miscarriages and they're just having stillborns. I'm like, you guys are breaking my heart. You guys are, this is absolutely killing me. And so then when I lived in Colorado, I had gone to school with someone and I became friends with her, and I saw that she was a surrogate. I'm like, what company do you work for? Because I was looking it up, but I saw that she was doing this. I'm like, okay, I want to get into this. So I asked the company she was for. And then they said, you have to be this certain weight. And then I was like, okay, got it. So I started losing weight. And then once I lost weight, it was a lot more fun to hang out with my daughter at the same time, because I can run around with her and do this and that. But then that got me into the first surrogacy. It's just, once I lost all that weight, I got into that. And it was just, that first surrogacy was the most wonderful experience. You get baby fever from it.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
How do you even, so you see someone else who is walking this path, being a surrogate, and you think you're done. You've got your beautiful girl, but loved being pregnant and thought everybody else should have kids. How do you, like, that is a big, I don't even know. I don't even have the word for it. Like, giving your body, you know, the space to harbor this little beautiful life for someone else. Like, how do you even fathom that? Like, was it even like something you had to contemplate a lot? Or you were just like, no, these people need babies and I'm going to be the one to carry them?
It was both. It was, honestly, it was both, because I see so much of my daughter wanting to be a big sister. And then it's like, I'm sorry, honey, I'm not doing this by myself. I've done this by myself for a long time. I want to give you a sibling. I want to give you a sibling so bad, but mentally I can't be there to do it. I don't have the heart to put another child into this world where I would mentally not be there to give my all to these children. And so at that point I had to explain to her, saying, this is what this is. This is what I'm doing, honey. And, you know, and then after I gave birth, I spoiled her. But then it's just, it is hard. It's a big mind game, because you're pregnant for so long and you're feeling these kicks, and it's like you try so hard to not want to go baby shopping, which is what you want to do. Like, if you love babies and enjoy being pregnant, it's like the same thing. You enjoy it. You enjoy growing it. But it's hard because you have to tear yourself apart. You don't get the baby shower. You don't get the maternity photos. You don't get that heart-to-heart moment. You don't get the skin-to-skin after they're born. You don't get to cuddle them and fall asleep with them, and, you know, when they wake up. And you don't, it's a giant mind game where it's, yeah, I want to give this family this baby. I want you to experience what it's like. I want you to smell the baby's hair when they're cuddling on your chest. And it's like, I want that. I do, but I can't do it by myself. So I get the best of both worlds. I get to have a baby for somebody. I get to carry this baby. I get to feel the kicks. And that's the greedy part of me. I get to feel the kicks. And these parents that can't have babies are just, okay, we trust you to have this baby carry for us, and they're missing out on all the appointments. And it's like, I just finally sent off all the ultrasound pictures to the family. I had like 7 envelopes of every appointment. I just finally sent it off. And it's like, I feel greedy in a sense where it's like, I get to be pregnant and enjoy the fruition and the feeling the baby and the growing and the pictures and all this and all that. And then I also get to hand them the baby afterwards, and I get my sleep.
Oh,
but they get their baby.
There are so many things. How do you even go about finding a match? Because obviously you have to pick the person or couple, whatever it looks like, and they also have to choose you back. So what is that process even like?
So the company I work for, they're called Love and Kindness. They're based in the United States. I'm not sure where the owner is located, but it's spread all over the country. They go through a very extensive process first. First, you have to send in your application. You have to go through a background check. And then you have to go through a psychiatric evaluation. You have to go through whatever clinic you're being sent to. You have to go through their medical screening and whatever they require. And then once you pass all of those, then you're able to start matching with people. Whoever is your surrogacy coordinator, you let them know what you're open to. So I have to let them know, am I open if the parent wants an open surrogacy or a closed surrogacy, like an open adoption or closed adoption? Would I be okay with them wanting to send pictures or not sending pictures? Do you want to be in the kid's life? And you have to tell them everything, what you want, what you don't want. Are you okay with carrying twins? Are you okay with multiple embryo transfers just in case? Or like all these things, are you okay for caring for a gay couple, straight couple, single couple, whatever it is? You have to tell them all these questions. You have to let them know what are your okays with them being in the room when you deliver, video calls, FaceTime, text messages, all these things. There's like a 20-minute interview of just the surrogacy coordinator asking me all these lists of questions. And my coordinator, she went to me and she was like, hey, I had this couple who has been trying for so long. They went on the list for about 18 months of just trying to find one surrogate. And they were like, but they want twins. I'm like, I could do twins. It's like a bucket list thing. I wanted to be the greedy part. I wanted to feel them fight. I wanted to feel their first fight in there. I wanted to feel the disputes. I wanted to be like, you know, this one didn't like it when I ate this, and this one didn't like it when I did this. I wanted to feel them. And so once I said, yeah, I'll sit down with them, I'll have a talk with them, we had about a 45-minute Zoom call with the owner of the company, my surrogacy coordinator, and I believe both of our attorneys, and then the parents, and then me. So we were talking, and we each had a list of questions that we had to ask. We had to make sure all of those bases were covered before we even went ahead with it. And I feel like it was a good phone call because we talked for 45 minutes. But at the end of the call, both of us were told that we have 72 hours to give a yes or a no. And then once we have a yes, then we go to their clinic and make sure my lining, everything, more ultrasounds, more checks, making sure everything is still good, get clearance from them. And then, you have to make sure your uterus looks good. There's no polyps growing from the last pregnancy. You have to get those cleared out because they don't want anything in the way of the embryo growing. It's an extensive process. And then once you go and you get everything checked, they insert like a saline balloon into your uterus with an ultrasound, and they blow it up and they have to check for little polyps and everything. And if they don't see anything, then they schedule medications to get sent. And then if they do see something, you get scheduled to get them removed. And then once you heal, then they start sending you medications, and then you do the medications, and then you do the transfer, and then you're on medications for about 10 to 12 weeks. Wow. Sorry, I went on ranting, but that's how it typically is, the selection process.
That is insane. Has there ever been a meeting where you've met up with someone where it wasn't a match, where you decided no, or they decided no?
No, actually. The first one with my first surrogacy, he was my first call. I liked his energy. I liked his vibe. I was like, he's a single man that just wanted his baby. And for a single man just wanting his baby, that's like, you're willing to spend this much money on things getting done just to have your baby. You can go and adopt a baby to have your child, but you want your flesh and your blood. You want your child. And so it's just like, okay. Yes. You read great to me. And then this one, when they're telling me their story, they had a surrogate, that one fell through. Then they had the next surrogate, and that one fell through. And it's like, you guys are the most patient people, and you just want your babies. That's all you want, is your baby. So it's like, there was no question. It was just like, yes, absolutely. You just want your babies. Let's do this.
And I just can't even imagine. Let's go back to your first surrogacy, and then we'll get into this, mm-hmm. this second one. But so it's a single male.
The first one was a single male
who wanted a baby. And so then obviously, would he have to get a donor egg, or did he know someone?
So all of them, every egg, I believe, has to be through an egg donor, because they all have to get genetically tested.
Okay.
Yeah, they have, each clinic has their own selection of banks for eggs, like how they have sperm donors, they have egg donor banks, and they have to make sure they're genetically tested to make sure they're high, not like high quality embryos, but embryos that are safe to go for implantation.
Okay, so you say yes, you see this man who just wants a child, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to give you the gift of life. So what did you decide in that case? Were you having like open or closed? I know when I was at the airport, you showed me a little picture of the little one who his birthday was coming up in a few days. So, and you also said to me that you had really bad postpartum as well.
The postpartum was bad. I didn't expect me to hit it like that. But with him, we know we both had decided it would be open. He was like, you know, I want you. There was a hard language barrier. So his attorney, he spoke English and Spanish, so he could translate for him sometimes when he was hard of understanding. But it was hard. We both agreed like, hey, yeah, you know what? You can fly out to see us in Spain for his first birthday. You can come out and visit anytime you want. And he still has currently to this day that open door policy. It's like, if you want to see, go ahead. He just, my birthday is in a few days, and he sent me a happy birthday video here early of him and his baby singing happy birthday and dancing. I was like, we still have that wonderful open door, which means in my head, I know I made that right decision, because neither of us are overly bombarding each other, like saying no one's overstepping boundaries. It's like, we both agreed, not my baby. This is your baby. I'm letting you guys do your time. I'm not trying to force myself into this child's life. If you want me into this child's life, this is where, you know, we had that agreement. We went from there, and it's like, you know, sometimes I'll just pop in and say hi. But it was hard. The postpartum was hard because I didn't know how to handle it. It was a day or two after I gave birth. He lets me hold his baby. He lets me hold him, and he's getting fussy and he's crying. And I was like, I haven't carried a newborn that, you know, people trusted me to carry a newborn after a day and feed him and hold him like this for this long. And it's not my baby. But they do have in the contract that says I get an hour of time with the baby. So I get my bonding goodbye, hello, nice to meet you, take care time. And he was getting fussy and he was crying. I started holding him and I was talking to him, and he instantly just stopped. He instantly stopped crying, stopped everything. I'm just like, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You recognize my voice. And that's the part I love about being pregnant. It's like they're listening to me. They're listening to that safe sound. And it's when they come out, this is what I remember. I don't remember this man's voice. I remember you. And I remember looking at him and I was like, it was all worth it. It was all worth it right there, because he's just looking at me and he's like, okay, you're safe. You're a safe person. You took care of me. I'm out here in the open world, and I know I'm safe in your arms. I was safe in your belly, and I'm safe out here with you. And it's like, that's what kind of triggered the postpartum, was because that right there. I was like, okay. So I had a hard postpartum for a couple months, but I'm good.
Oh my gosh. That is like, oh, just heart wrenching. It's like you're still his mom, you know, in a way. Carry this little one, even though he's now with his father, like you're still in a way like his mommy, and recognizing your voice. Oh my gosh.
It was hard. It was hard.
How was it like walking out of the the hospital, like you said, an hour to say hello and goodbye in the same kind of breath.
So there was a time where he had to be in the hospital for a little bit longer. I don't know why he had to stay in the hospital for a few days, but the dad, he had to go home, not go home, but to the Airbnb he was renting, and he had to go get a few things because he was trying to get things going so we can get the passport going so we can take him home. And so he's like, I forgot some documents back home. If you want, you can go hang out with him in the nursery. It's like, yes, I'll be there in 5 seconds. So I went there and I just sat there for 2 hours just holding him. It's like, he's holding my finger and I'm just staring at his beautiful little face. And I'm just like, I didn't have to feed him because he's like, yeah, he fed him before he left. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'll just sit here and I'll just hold you. And I was there for a good couple hours and I was like, I'm sorry, my butt hurts. I have to go lay down. And so I just like went there and I fell asleep and it was dinner time and I went to the room they were staying at and we hung out. He had his dinner, changed his diaper, changed him into his clothes. And then about a week later, they went back to the Airbnb in Sacramento and I brought my daughter. My daughter met him. And then a week later, they're supposed to be heading back to Spain and I got COVID. So I didn't get to say goodbye. I told him, I was like, I'll drive you to the airport. I'll drive you. Then I got COVID. So I was like, I can't drive you. And that killed me. It killed me so much because I wanted to say goodbye. I wanted to see them off and I couldn't.
So your daughter, what does she think about all of this? She got to go meet the little one who, I mean, she was with you.
The whole time.
Yeah, the whole time. So it's like mom's having a little baby and then there's no baby and she's wanting a sibling. So how did she kind of handle this whole process alongside you?
She handled it pretty well. She was just saying, you know, I want a sibling. I want a brother. I want a sister. I want something. I want a baby because I see how good she is with babies. She is so good with babies. And it's like, Aubrey, I'm sorry. I can't do it. I can't. Not that she needs to know, but I tied my tubes and it's so much harder for me to have a kid. So I can't just do that naturally. And if I really wanted to have a kid, I have to go through IVF again to have another of my kid. So it's not just so simple of just, yeah, let me just give you one like that. I just can't. But she's handling it. I feel bad. I do feel bad because I'm getting pregnant for these other people, for them to have babies. And she's sitting here. It's like, okay, you're doing this. Where's our baby? And so I'm still hesitant to tell her now because this is the second time and she doesn't know that there's another baby.
How
about
incredible.
To be 20 weeks.
Insane. Okay. We're going to get to that, but how incredible that she gets to see her mom give this gift of life to other people. Like what that would do for, you know, a little person growing up to understand.
Yeah.
She doesn't understand it all in this moment and right now, but to see like how you can be so compassionate and
empathetic
and just give this gift to these couples or these people that just can't have their own, like that is just so huge. So
I hope one day she does understand what I was doing. And, you know, I hope she sees where I'm coming from when she's older, why I couldn't have another kid for her and why she understands why I didn't. Like, I feel bad that I'm not letting her grow up with a sibling, but I feel like when she's older and I can explain it to her, it'll be better for her to know that I'd rather be a mother that was mentally present and physically present than not having me mentally or physically there to be able to mentally and physically provide for her and not have to struggle with, you know, financially providing or anything of that sort. Whereas I'm providing this baby for that family, which is also helping us in the end, which is, I still feel bad. I want her to have a sibling. She's so good with babies. It kills me still that I'm doing this. I'm doing this again to her, but I hope one day she understands what I did and why I did it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't get it in the moment, but when you look back, it all falls into place and makes sense. And it's like, even those people that have baby fever, maybe want a baby and know they don't, you can get in your baby snuggles and cuddles and friends and cousins or in different ways. And it's like, we've all kind of got our own little path. My little guy, I have two sons who are older, 27 and 25. And then through my husband's previous marriage, I know I have a granddaughter too. She'll be one in a month and people are like, grandmother. Yeah. So, anyways, the boys were 8 and 10 when I came into their life, and now they're 25 and 27. So like I said, in my story, a little bit of it, you know, my multiple miscarriages, it took time to get pregnant and have him. So he's 9 now, but the boys were 16 and 18 when he was born, and we shared them with their mother. So it's like my son has kind of ish grown up like an only child just because he's the one in the house and they've been older. So I know for so long that kind of, I don't know, I'd be like, oh, I just want him to experience these experiences with siblings or, you know, have someone, and he's so lovely and lovable and just loves babies and is so good. And where I've told myself, like, everybody's, you know, I grew up with two siblings, so there was three of us, and you hear these stories of like only child or people with whatever. And I'm like, I am like the so present and available and like so connected. We're so connected. And if we did have another, then yeah, kind of like you said, at this point, maybe, I don't know, it's just not in the cards, but he has like this beautiful, blessed life just as kind of an only child that he might not get until he gets older too. So you didn't tell your little one. So you did this in COVID-ish or like the end of COVID, or what's kind of the time frame? Because you showed me a picture at the airport of this little boy gonna turn 1, and you are now 20 weeks pregnant again. So like, what's the time
this frame? One, so I gave birth to him in November of 2022. And the transfer was February of 2022. So, yeah, it was like February 17th, 2022. And then everything, that one went really fast. I've had two different clinics. So the one he chose was based in Utah. And then the one I had chose for this last one, this current one, was in LA. But the first one, they had a whole calendar for like 3 months. So before the transfer, I had to follow this thing for since December, from January to February. I had all these little things going. And then before that, you have the 3 months of psychiatrics and the medical screenings and the background checks and all these things. So I think I was going since about July or August of 2021. It was a very long but fast process, because I started in July and I had to transfer in February and then gave birth in November. So like, it took about a year and a half to do everything, but it felt like it went really fast. It was so fun though. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. And this man, he was in Spain. So how do you get connected with people from around the world? Like, is that how hard it is to find a surrogate, or why all the way in the United States when he's all the way in Spain?
So I believe that I'm not exactly sure how the owner of the company I work in with does all of that. I just know that there's some people that if you tell certain people in your country, they can connect you to different places. Or if, you know, quick Google search and say, hey, I'm looking for a surrogate, and you Google and you find these things. Because when you go on to Loving Kindness, you can either say, be an egg donor, be a sperm donor, be a surrogate, or I'm looking for a surrogate. And that's where you just kind of just go. And so I know that we're based in the United States, but it's international. There's surrogates that are with our company that go to Canada. There's surrogates that go to China. There's they're all over the world. So it's just, I feel like it's becoming more popular, but it's not as popular as people think it is, where it still needs to be flown all over to, you know, people have to go to one country to get their baby, which is sad. People have to go to a country to get their baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard.
Wow. So that was 2022, and then you ended up getting COVID and not being able to say your goodbyes as you'd want to. And now here we are, it's 2024, and you're 20 weeks pregnant. And initially you did say yes to getting pregnant with twins. So can you tell us a little bit about this couple that you are now the surrogate for, without giving us too much information about like why you chose them or they chose you and how that all kind of came to fruition?
So, listening to their story, they're a same-sex couple, and they can't make their own. They have been married for quite some time. They've done what they wanted to do as a married couple without kids. They've explored, they've gotten their careers together. They've gotten everything they need to do to get themselves established, to realize that they're both ready for these babies. And they're just trying to figure out the best way to go about it. And they said, I believe they said this, that if, you know, surrogacy didn't work out for them and it took so long, yeah, they might have to end up adopting. But when I was on the phone with them and they're telling me their journey, it's just, in a way, with only knowing them for like 45 minutes, I trusted them, because it was, you guys said you got your exploration out of the way. You're not going to be like, okay, well, we're going to either take these babies with us on a trip, we don't know how it's going to work out, or they're going to leave them with the family and then come back. Okay, we're back. But they did all that they wanted to do. They enjoyed their time. Now they want to enjoy it with babies, and they wanted to enjoy it with each of, you know, a baby in each hand. They just wanted to have their own baby. They wanted to have their baby, and like, look at this. And they wanted to have their flesh and blood right there. And it's like, from there, I trusted them. I still do. I still do trust them. And it was just, from what they told me, it was just, they're the most deserving couple to get their babies. They need their babies.
And is it harder for same-sex couples to get matched up, or are there a lot of surrogates that are willing to carry for same-sex couples?
There are some, that's a lot of the questions. I haven't come across a surrogate that has been against it yet, but there are some people that judge the surrogates because they said what they're doing, you know, it doesn't fit in with specific religions.
Okay. Yeah. So this couple, they wanted one of each. Mm-hmm. So when I had talked to you at the airport, like, I was just in awe that you were now going to get pregnant for the second time, but with twins for this couple who wanted one each. They each wanted a little piece of them. So
yeah.
You got
that was it was exciting. I wanted them to have each of their own baby, and they were trying, you know, the day of the transfer, they were told, okay, it's a 50, like they didn't know. They thought the odds were higher the day of the transfer. They're like, yeah, the doctor told us it would be about 75% chance of getting it, of both staying. And I was like, oh, she told me a different number. She told me a 50% chance. And they're like, wait, I would have remembered that number. And so we get into the transfer and the doctor is telling them, yeah, okay, we have a 50% chance. And you can just see his face just drop and droop. And I was like, okay. I didn't mean to stress you out. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break the news to you before the doctor did. I thought we all knew that number. But I mean, it's hard. It's hard to transfer two embryos that are trying to both attach to a uterus to both grow. And they're both fighting for space, which is very hard. And then if one doesn't make it, one loses out on their baby, which is what they wanted in the beginning. They both wanted their babies to be born at the same time, and they both end up with one of each, which was really, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. So you go through that process. They find out, in fact, yeah, it's not that easy, or the odds aren't what you initially thought. But initially, you do get pregnant with both. Do you? You got pregnant with both, or they both are?
One didn't make it.
One didn't
make one, it. They did a heartbeat detection 10 days after the transfer, which I think that, because the transfer was November 17th, and I think my heartbeat detection was December 6th. I think it's like 2.5 weeks. But they ended up, one didn't make it. I had gone to do my ultrasound, and you can see a little yolk. You can see one heartbeat, you can see one embryo, you can see one. But I'm not a medical professional by any means, but my uterus just seemed really big and really empty. And there's like a flicker of something in there. It's like a really heavy circle in there. And we were like, you know, we're not going to know now. It could show up. I'm like, I don't know if it really could show up. And like, if you see it, you see it. But, you know, telling them, it was hard. It was hard right there, because it was like I went through postpartum. You know, we go through this. Like, I had postpartum there for a good month, because I felt for them. I felt what they were going through. I didn't hear from them for the whole weekend. And they said, you know, we were sorry. We had to grieve. We have to grieve what we thought would be two would only be one. We had to snap ourselves out of it and realize that we're not getting them. But, you know, we have a baby. We have a baby. We have a heartbeat. We have a baby. And then like the caps, it went eventually all caps. We have a baby. And it's like, yes, we do. We have a baby. And then Christmas Eve comes around. And from my personal and professional non-medical opinion, I believe I suffered a miscarriage on Christmas Eve. And from what had fallen from me and what Google told me, it was an embryo. It was supposed to be a baby. And then I showed the clinic, they're like, no, it's a blood clot. I'm like, no, you Google images of what it's supposed to look like. And I was like, that was the baby. But that baby was still growing, but not growing. And so it was just, and then, you know, I go through postpartum up until Christmas Eve, and I went through postpartum again. So like, I initially thought that I lost their baby. I thought I had lost
both of their babies on Christmas Eve. Because in the end, I didn't know it was the second one. Because Christmas Eve, I'm like, I lost that one. I'm told a month ago that this one didn't make it in Christmas Eve. I'm told that I see this thing fall out of me. I sit in a hospital for 5 or 6 hours. They do my blood work and they do an ultrasound. And I didn't have a really nice ultrasound technician. She was very rude. She's like, if you had a miscarriage this morning, then why are you here? It's like, because I need clarification. I need to know what's going on. And she does an ultrasound and I'm waiting for about 3 hours to get a response back. If there's something, what's in there? And you know, what's in there, what's going on. And I find out that baby is still in there. He still has a heartbeat. He's still going wonderful. He's happy. I didn't tell the parents yet. I didn't want to freak them out on Christmas Eve and be like, hey, I'm in the hospital. This is what happened. It's been a very tough journey. It's been, they're both hesitant because it's like, they don't want to, you know, with everything that goes on, they hear the reason I'm doing this, people are going through miscarriages. People have stillborns, things go wrong. Things happen. Everyone, we're human, things happen. And so the parents are still hesitant. They're like, okay, I can't get my hopes up. I can't get my hopes up. And so I had that miscarriage and I was like, I'm so scared to tell them. I'm so scared because I don't want them to have their hearts and dreams and hopes and wishes of this baby. And it's like, there's another thing, another reason for them to be hesitant. It's like, I didn't do anything. I lay on my butt all day. I go to school. I'm trying not to jeopardize this baby at all. It's been tough. It's been tough.
Yeah. And do you have anybody that you like talk to or go through it with, because your daughter doesn't know yet and you're 20 weeks. So first, when are you going to break the news? And second, do you have like a support group around you that you can go through? Cause oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. Like, you know, it's one thing to carry the weight for yourself and like figure it all out, the muddledness of it all just for you, but then having to share that with the people who are in on it with you, like that's a whole different story.
Yeah. So there's a group that I'm on Facebook for, my surrogacy coordinator. She got together all of the surrogates that are together and we all can post like belly pictures. Or we say, hey, is this normal? What's going on? And we end up saying, oh, you know, you should talk to your doctor about that. And, you know, we just talk and we share cravings and all these things like that. But no one's gotten into the deep and nitty gritty of the heart postpartum yet. Everyone, it's just mainly like exciting, supporting. If I have any doubts or anything, if I'm sad or if I'm scared or if I'm hesitant or something, I usually reach out to my surrogacy coordinator. She's a godsend. She's wonderful. She just actually finished a surrogacy of her own just last week. She gave birth to a baby last week. And so I can't talk to her, but I have other people within the company I talk to if I have any questions or if I'm nervous. And there was times where I'd be messaging her. It's like, I don't feel right. I don't feel right at all. Something feels wrong. Like I should be feeling movement. I don't feel movement. I'm spotting or this and that. I reach out to my coordinators because that's what they're kind of there for, is to like, if I ever need to talk, I can talk to them because I feel like they're the only ones that can neutralize what's going on in my head because they've gone through it. They know the parents I'm working with. They know everything I'm working with. They have access to my medical records. They have access to everything. And it was their, what I was going through on Christmas Eve, you know, the owner of the company, she was like, I am so sorry this happened to you. I'm so sorry. I want you to relax. I want you to take care of yourself. And she sent me money just to get DoorDash for food so I don't have to get up and do anything. So it's like, I don't have to, I have a wonderful tribe that the company comes with. So whenever people are like, oh, how do I get started? It's like, I have a great company for you if you want to do this because they just answer anything and they'll talk to you as long as you need them to talk to you. Like they never rush you to get on the phone. They're there to talk to you. And that's what I feel like I need sometimes. And I've become close with the parents and I can text them and call them anytime and they're there. They'll just answer the phone. Or if I don't answer, they're like, sorry, sorry, sorry. And we joke back and forth. Like, why didn't you answer my phone call? I'm carrying your children. Like, it's just, we've gotten close where we can banter and talk. And the company is just there. It's a wonderful community. And I don't know when I'm going to tell my daughter, probably when I give birth.
Mom just has to go away for the weekend, honey. I'll be back in a couple days. Oh my gosh.
I feel like it's going to end up being like, hey, you want to go to grandma's for the weekend?
Yeah. And then Grandma 20 years later, remember that time you had that really fun time at grandma's? Yeah, this is what mom was doing. Right. Okay. So this couple that you're caring for now, what did you decide for like after the birth happens? Are you like open, closed? Are you going to have a relationship?
Open. All like I said, I can be in the life as much as we're both comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But I told them I'd probably do the same as I did the last one. Like I had a 48-page contract I've signed. I've, you know, not my baby, not me. Parents can close off communication whenever they want. So it's like, we don't text every day, all day. And like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? We just, you know, updates every Sunday. One of them sends me a picture of a fruit of the week. The fruit the baby is the biggest, like, we have an avocado, we have a tomato, we have this, we have an onion. And so every week I'm getting updates. And so, you know, I send them updates of pictures. I send them, we do updates of appointments. I have my anatomy scan on April 2nd. So I haven't met both of them. I've only met one in person. So if they both come up for the anatomy scan, I'll finally meet the other one.
And do they live close by?
LA. Okay. Los Angeles. So they're a 6 to 7, 6 to 8 hour drive, but it's an hour and a half flight. But they haven't told their family yet either.
What? Okay. No. I totally get it because of what I all kind of went through in my pregnancy journey. But okay. So this is what I'm thinking. Your daughter goes to grandma's for the weekend. She has the best weekend ever. Maybe they go to like, I don't know, Disneyland, something. This couple goes on a road trip. They're getting all their travel in. Of course they are. The family thinks nothing of it because they've traveled, they've done all the things. And then all of a sudden, mommy's tummy is gone. And all of a sudden, somebody has a nephew or a grandchild or something. And I totally get it. That is just like, still at the same time, you're like, oh my goodness. Okay. Waiting until, I guess the time until feels official. Right. Official. Yes. Official. There you go. Yeah. Who did that? Oh yeah. Erin Andrews. Do you know about her? She is, she's in football. She has a podcast called the Calm Down Podcast, and she had a surrogate and nobody knew until her little Max arrived. Her story is like really absolutely incredible. I'll have to send it to you, but yeah, nobody knew. And then she works, in football. So people like the next day we're looking at her, she's very tall and thin. Like you just had a baby. What? I swear I saw you last week. And then she's like, yeah, no, I had a surrogate, but didn't tell anybody. But you said you signed this contract. Yeah. Like, how do you not? And how does your daughter not know? Like, are you just wearing baggy clothes? Are you form fitted clothes? How old is she?
Like, a few weeks ago, we went to the This is why I think I told you the almond blossoms are like really in effect right now. And so every year my town has an almond blossom festival. And she goes up to me and she was like, "Mommy, your belly is really big." And I'm like, "You don't tell a woman that. You don't go up to a woman and tell them their belly is big." Like, she didn't ask me if I was pregnant. She didn't ask me about anything else. She just said, "Mommy, your belly is really big." But I mean, I did drop out of nursing school. So my, I'm going to culinary school now. And so my chef's coats are really baggy. I do tend to wear baggier clothes. I don't like form fitting stuff except for today, 'cause he's out and popping. But, no, it's, I think I hide it pretty well. And maybe I'm just trying to teach her not how to body shame women. Like, if a woman has a belly, don't just assume she's pregnant. So I'm hoping that helps her. And maybe by the time I'm ready to tell her, you know, just, I don't want to give her 10 months of heartbreak.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hard place to be, to know when. I guess you'll know when it is the right time.
And they're the parents, I believe they're planning on telling them the week of my anatomy scan. So a week ago, I sent them all of the pictures from I've gotten all my ultrasounds. I sent them to them. And so when they come for the anatomy scan, they'll get all the pictures there. They get everything. They got all the pictures, and they are planning to go to one parent's house, tell them then, and then go to fly to one of the other parents' house and tell them then. They're like, we're in the 20s. Let's tell them, because by the time the 30s comes, everyone's going to be struggling to get them something for a baby shower gift. And it's like, come on, guys. Why didn't you tell me sooner? Because they don't want to just send them a picture of a baby like, oh, we had a baby.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my gosh. The 48-page document that you signed, like, I totally get that. And then there's like, what you think that you're signing up for, and then actually like living it out in reality. Has there been anything in that document that you've signed that you, after it's all said and done, you're like, no, like that just doesn't feel right? Or do you know what I mean? 'Cause it's one thing just to sign until it's actually real.
So in the document, there's a giant part of, compensation. So if I have to terminate a pregnancy, if I lose it, if I have to go through a mock cycle, if I have to go through all these things, they said, okay, we'll compensate you for this. And then there's pages of, you know, you are not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to eat this. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to go skydiving. You can't get tattoos. No, you know, no raw fish. Not too much of something. Don't take too much of this. Take your prenatals. You can get acupuncture, but be good with it or something. You know, you just, there's a lot. 'Cause it's, you know, it's not your baby. I'm not allowed to leave the country at all through the whole pregnancy. I signed a contract saying I will stay in the United States for the whole duration of the pregnancy. And then there's even a part that says in the third trimester, I'm not allowed to leave California. So it's like, I have to stay in California for this amount of time. I can't leave anywhere. I can't go on plane anywhere. And so I have to, and it's not just saying this, it's pages of it going into depth about it. It's saying that I will not claim this baby as my baby. I will submit to genetic testing. I will abstain from this. I will do my medical clearance doing this. I will take my injections as I'm told. I will do my medications as I'm told. It's just a very in-depth, lawyer-written, 48-page document. And then my boyfriend at the time, he had to sign it and say, this is not my baby. I will submit to paternity testing if needed. I have been medically cleared, because he had to get medically cleared to even be with me. So if he wanted to be near me, kiss me, hold me, he had to get cleared that he's not going to transfer any infectious diseases to me that could harm the baby. And I had to say that I'd submitted to testing. And if it ever, you know, turns out that was falsified, obviously I have a contract saying, well, you did this. And then, oh, and then I signed an 11-page document a week and a half ago saying, this is their baby. I'm being sued for, parental rights, and this is their baby, not mine. The baby will be living at this address, not me, stating that I am a surrogate and surrogate only, no connection to this child. And it's just a very in-depth. And I sent a picture of it to the parent. I was like, you're suing me? He was like, I don't like the word sued. I'm not suing you, but it says it on our end too. It's like, okay. So it was just weird to say that it says you are being sued. It's like, you're suing me. I didn't do anything. You can have the baby. It's your baby. I don't want to keep the baby, but here. But yeah, it's just a very long and lengthy contract. Because there are some people that are, well, I grew them. I don't want to give them to you anymore.
I know it's hard. What I was thinking, that it would be so hard to have to carry a baby and then to have to, you know, maybe you have a change of mind or feelings or whatever. I think, because sometimes you, like I said, you might sign up thinking it might be this way, and then all of a sudden you're like, change your mind. Yeah. So I guess that would be why you need such a lengthy, in-depth contract.
To me, it just feels like personally, don't feel like I could be a baby snatcher. You know, you go into a nursery at a hospital and you say, oh, I like this baby, I'll just take it. It's like, to me, it's like you have to separate it and say, like, yeah, I did grow this baby. Oh, wait, it's not yours. Like when people find out I'm pregnant, they're like, oh, congratulations. I'm like, thanks, it's not mine. And it's just people look at me weird and they're like, what do you mean? What do you mean it's not yours? I'm like, it's not mine. It's not my baby. I'm a surrogate. And so it would be weird to me, honestly, giving birth to this baby. But in my head, it's like, oh, this isn't my baby. And I'm like, no, I'm okay. I want to take this baby home. But I'm looking at it, it's like, you're not my flesh. You're not my blood. You're nothing of that sort to me. You're not related to me. The only thing that you know about me is my voice and my smell. But other than that, you're not mine. It'd be weird to me to do that. But obviously, the lawyers don't know that. The parents don't know that. They have to trust that I'm like, your baby. So me personally, I don't think I ever could do that.
Wow. Did you have to go through any sort of like therapy to get there? Because I feel like that's a really great mindset to be in this space that you're doing that you've really just know that deep within, that it's like, okay, I am doing this for this couple or for this person. And that is like as far as it goes. But yeah. Has that ever,
it took some switching. I had my tubes tied in 2020. So with me in that head game, it's like, I am done. I have my daughter. So in my head, it's like, I love being pregnant, but I mentally can't do it. I mean, I put my daughter to bed and she's like, no, you're staying in bed with me. You're cuddling with me. So I lay in bed with her all night and I'm scratching her back and I'm reading her stories and I'm on my phone playing lullaby music. So me and her have this whole bedtime routine of how she wants to be put to bed. And it's like, if I had two kids and I'm by myself, it's like one of them would suffer. So if I had two kids, it's like, I couldn't do both. I couldn't be like, okay, I put you to bed, now I have to go put this one to bed. And one will be like, well, you like them more than me. What happened to our bedtime routine? You don't do this to me anymore. It's like, okay, then I feel like I'd be torn different places. So in my head, it's like, I put myself there. Like I mentally don't think I can stretch myself to that. And the parents that are out there that do it, that's a wonderful hat that they can wear, because I cannot wear that hat. That's a hat that they have earned and properly deserved, because I personally know I can't do that. That's hard. That's very hard. And I don't have the energy for it. And, you know, they probably don't have the energy for it either, but they're doing it somehow and I can't. But yeah, that's how I got there.
Well, how amazing to be that self-aware that you realize for you in your situation that it's just what works for you. So, yeah, I guess to close off, anybody who is either considering being a surrogate or looking to find a surrogate, what would you say to them?
Find the right environment, because without your environment, you can't do it. You have to be in a setting where if you have a partner, they have to accept you being pregnant and pregnant with somebody else's. You have to, and if you don't have a partner, you need someone because you need them to be able to support you, taking you to your doctor's appointments, because you can't go to the embryo transfer by yourself. You have to have someone there. So someone that's willing to support you from beginning to end. If you need someone there to hold your hand in the delivery room while the parents are holding their baby and you're left by yourself on that hospital table getting sewn up, you need someone there to support you through the whole thing. Like, it's easy to say it and to listen to it, but it's harder to actually fathom, like, understand what is coming out. Because, oh yeah, sure, I can have someone, but then when the time is there and you're like, I'm into labor right now, I need you here right now. I need you. My bag is in the back of the car. Can you please drive me? Because I can't drive myself. You need to have that person there. You need the tribe is the biggest thing, the absolute biggest thing. And it's just hard. It's hard to mentally get there. And you have to be okay with needles.
Yeah, all the injections and the weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've just heard from a few people that I know who've been through IVF, that process getting there to the transfer, and how taxing it can be emotionally, hormonally. Like, just a few people that have felt super alone and overwhelmed. And
that's the injections, I feel like, are the hardest part. Because you have to do it every day. And yeah, it's not in your stomach. Like, you see some people post about, it's like that tiny to your stomach. I did it into my back on my hip, and it's about a 1.5-inch needle. And, you know, you could have other people do it, but then it's like, they could mess it up. But that's what has me sometimes hesitant about it. And these parents, since they didn't get both of their babies, I told them I would do it again. To get their baby. They need their baby. Both wanted their baby. So I was like, I told myself I wasn't gonna be done after this one. But they only got one of their babies. So I was like, okay, I will do this again if you want me to. Cause they were talking about wanting their Irish twins. It's like, okay.
I can't even. I don't even have any words. I just am like, you know, I actually wondered that in the back of my mind, but I just like, no, you're not asking that question. You're not going to ask if you're ever going to be a surrogate again. Like, you have given life to one, and now you have another one on the way. And wow, like I said in the intro, you are like a walking, breathing angel. And I know that just somebody who has struggled with getting pregnant and multiple miscarriages, and at one point in time considered, like, the thought of surrogacy came into my mind, and that there are so many pathways into being a parent. And for those who want, like you said, their own flesh and blood. And wow, I just, what a blessing you are.
They want their baby. I can't tell them no. And it's like, knowing what they went through in the beginning just to get to me, and if I told them no, I'm sorry, and personally knowing they have to go through it possibly again with someone different, and they'll struggle again for another almost 2 years. And it's like, no, I'd rather you guys just get your babies. Please just have your baby.
Wow. Okay. That is absolutely just the most beautiful. So what have they said? Have they even got there? Are they thinking ahead? Are they thinking, okay, we will take this route going forward, or is it just something that's kind of floating around?
They brought it up to me about almost a month ago. They had brought it up to my surrogacy coordinator, talked to them about it. They said, you know, no pressure. We don't 100% know right now if we do, because they said, you know, after delivery, it can be from 3 to 6 months where I can be pregnant again. And if it's a C-section, it's a year because everything has to heal. So like, okay. And at the time when I was with my boyfriend, we were trying to figure out our own things that we had to go through. Did he want kids? Did he not want kids? Because I was going to prioritize my boyfriend and him having kids first before I did a surrogacy, because, you know, me and him were both getting old. I don't want to wait too long if I wanted another kid of my own, because him and I would have to go through IVF. And so it's like, okay, what are we doing? What are we doing right now? And so at that time, I was like, this is a bigger conversation that him and I have to have. And then my boyfriend and I, we have split ways. So now it's like, the only answer is yes. There's nothing stopping me from thinking, well, this could get in the way, but no. There's nothing else in the way. This is what needs to be done. They want each of their own. They want each of their own baby. That they need their own baby. So it wasn't even a question. It's like, yes, baby. So they said they'll probably figure out a more definite answer after delivery.
Mm.
When they realize if they see if they can handle two babies at once or not.
Right.
They don't know.
Wow.
So, like, here they are jumping in, you know, head first into transferring and getting twins. And now it's like, well, now that we have one, let's see if we can handle this one first. And then we'll see if we want to transfer a second one. It's like, if you're going to have twins, you know, you want to do it. You know, you want to. You're going to do twins where they're crying and pooping at the same time. And I feel like it might be easier to do a six-year-old and a newborn, not a six-year-old, like a year and a half baby versus a newborn, because, you know, one's becoming more independent.
Yeah.
And there's this one. They're just going to be exhausted a little longer, but it's fine.
Yeah. We all make it through the exhaustion. I was just talking about that today with someone. Oh my gosh. The, like, when you're first a new mom, that sleep deprivation is a thing that makes people crazy. It's like, you don't even know who you are anymore without sleep. So yeah.
You don't.
Well, you'll be getting your sleep. You'll be getting your sleep after the last one and this one. You're just such a gift to these deserving people who
they're the most deserving. They really are.
Oh.
Well, but you're an absolute angel too. You stopped and talked with me in an airport and you have no idea who I was.
And like, after this podcast, it's like everybody understands now why I was just so in awe and so just couldn't believe that there are really people like you who actually really truly believe for all of the greatest reasons why other people should be able to have their babies that they want to have. Like, it just was like the most like loving energy that you're just like, no, everybody should be able to have a baby if they want to have a baby. And I'm going to be the one who steps in and makes that happen and possible. Like, really, it is like their dream coming true through you. So yeah.
Thank you.
If
the babies are going to a good home, there's no reason why they shouldn't have babies.
It takes an angel to do that, because I don't know if I could do that and then say goodbye. It really does take a special person to step in and do that. So thank you. All right. Well,
thank you. It's absolutely, I hate to say it, but I am blessed that I can do it. That's the part that wrenches me. I'm blessed I can, but others struggle. So it's like, if it's just hard, it's hard. It's hard.
Yes. So much. So complex, all of it, but like, thank goodness that you're willing to go down that path.
I enjoy every moment of it.
Well, I can't wait to hear about this little one when he arrives. When is he supposed to arrive in the world?
So he's growing larger than he's supposed to be. He is due August 4th, but he's measuring at July 27th.
Okay, so
So we're getting there. I can show you my belly if you want right
yeah,
now. This
yes.
thing
I
is
love
huge.
a baby bump. Oh my gosh.
I'm absolutely, I feel massive right now. I'm trying to find a good counter to use.
Yeah,
Okay. Trying to see if it'll stand up right here on my bag holder. Okay. I don't look that pregnant right here, but when you go that way.
oh my gosh, you are adorable. OMG.
So I
Oh
have a
my gosh.
on belly, but yeah, I'm huge. I feel huge for 20. Yeah, and I went to the store like this, so they're just like, "Oh, you have a bump." Yeah, I do. I do have a bump.
Yes, and your little one too. Like, it's gonna be
He has to know.
maybe a challenge when other people are talking about your bump in front of her.
Oh, I have to tell everyone, like, she doesn't know.
Yeah.
She doesn't. Don't tell her, please. But it's hard. It's very hard, actually.
Well, I can't wait to hear how the rest of the story unfolds and going forward. And yeah, thank you for sharing like so
My
openly.
pleasure. Oh yeah, I'm an open book, and I will keep posting about it so you can. And I don't even don't mind sending you updates individually. It's just, I'm
Yes,
trying to be as
please.
open as I can about it. It's just, I just, they, you know, they also asked me to, don't tag us, but you can post. It's like, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not, it's not, I don't need to put you guys on blast about who the parents are. Thank you so much for talking with me today. I missed you. It's been a while.
I know, it's so good to see you. I'm so happy we got to connect again and dive into like, and I'm sure we just hit the surface of everything. I know you could like probably dive deeper and deeper into it, but it's just all
I could talk more.
so, yeah, it's so eye-opening and such a
Lengthy.
blessing
Yeah.
to be able to hear about it and actually ask the questions and understand about the process. And I think even if it could, your story sharing it could help someone in my community who maybe is, considering surrogacy for themselves or to gift the life to someone else, or maybe to understand someone else that they know who's
Yeah.
gone through the process. I think that is so, so valuable and so worth it
Oh,
for.
yeah.
Okay, well, thank you again, and so great talking with you. And yeah, if anybody else wants to connect with you, where can they find you and maybe ask the questions or.
We can find me on Instagram. I believe my name is Karina, Karina underscore Antoinette, Antoinette, with another underscore.
Okay, and I will
I
add
feel like
that to
that's
the show
it.
notes too. Yes, it'll be easy. Here's a click if you want to reach out to Karina and ask her any questions or share anything with her. You can definitely find that there and connect with her.
Anytime, please reach out to me.
Thank you for joining me on today's episode of All Things Relatable. If you know someone that would relate to this episode and get value from it, please pass it along. Also, if this episode resonated with you, I would love for you to rate, review, and subscribe.